a case that there was a large amount of money involved in chiropractors' fees. There was a feeling of the board that there was that this particular case, that the system had been disadvantaged by this particular practitioner. The board felt that the injured worker was entitled to a number of things, but we also felt that there had been a misuse of the medicals. However, there was no evidence given by the employer's insurance company or their lawyer. Now, you have, companies don't know what happened to them. That's one of the things.
That's, right.
That's one of my long-term goals. Employers do not know what happens to them, and that's how I got involved in it. I found out what was happening to me, and so they don't know what's happening to them. And I lost track there for a minute. Bring me back to reality. Put me back where I was. I went down a wrong track there for a minute.
You're talking about somebody that goes in there and the.
Oh, this
the attorney for the guy brings
this chiropractor thing. Okay, they did not enter any evidence from another doctor that this treatment was not necessary. The board, all three of us, labor, myself, and the chairman, there was no way that we could do anything except award those full medical benefits, realizing that they probably were not fair or right, but we were constrained by the way the law is, or by the ignorance of that particular attorney who ill-served his client in that case. I'm somewhat new on the board. However, I've got 3 years of working in this, and I've probably heard more horror stories than most. Sometimes I listen to Mr. Cowdery talking about giving power to the boards. You wonder why some of these attorneys come in and they go through some of these gyrations, talking triplicate and everything else, and there's not much you can do. You can't. The law makes you do just certain things that may or may not be right. There is a liberal interpretation to the law. It's not a liberal interpretation. They're written liberally and not necessarily wrongfully so. The working man has got to be protected. The insurance companies and the brokers that sell insurance, the workers' comp insurance, I believe don't necessarily do their job right. A large corporation or a corporation that is self-insured, they hire a safety engineer. His job is to make money for the company by saving costs through accidents. I have learned and am a complete advocate. I have saved my company a lot of money through rigorous safety programs within my own trucking company. I had a horrendous record. I didn't know. We bought insurance from insurance companies like anybody else. They never told us anything. There are people that are out there saying they have safety programs and we're going to help you. They in fact don't. And in Anchorage, where you've got some expertise, you can get some of this. You get on the Kenai, and I've given talks to groups in Kenai. The people down there, they cannot get the expertise to help them. The employers are truly lost, and there's an educational thing may help. One of my suggestions to the board, we're having our annual meeting in a couple of weeks, is that every time that there is either an award made or something comes before the board, that the employer is mandatorily given a notice of what's happening. In the 3 years or the 4 years before I got involved in workers' comp, things were happening to me, and I never even knew it. There was one fellow that got to us for $108,000 that worked for me for less than 4 hours, and allegedly hurt his knee. And way on downstream, I found out that there had been $108,000 spent in my name, and nobody ever asked me for my permission. And if I'd even known about the claim having been filed, I could have controverted the thing. I've asked insurance companies in the past that we were insured by an out-of-state company one time. I wanted a claim controverted. They didn't listen to me. I do believe things have changed somewhat up here, because during the pipeline and after, the workers' comp field up here was a cost-plus type of thing for the insurance company. There was no motivation. Since the passage of the change of the laws here last year and the year before, there are new insurance companies that are coming into Alaska. Wausau, for instance, Fireman's Fund now has an in-state adjuster. Alaska has got some notoriety for bringing their laws getting some balance to them. And there's open competition in insurance now in this state where there wasn't before. I mean, you can go out and any small person or medium size can make some pretty good arrangements for workers' comp insurance. It's not the way it was. There is some competition. It's got a long way to go. For employers, you mentioned the cost of your workers' comp insurance. I didn't pay any attention to mine until all of a sudden something at the end of the year was in six figures, and that was my premium. After about 4 years, and I went into panic. People think there's nothing they can do about it. They think this is insurance that they have to pay and that they can't affect it. That is not the truth. If people knew, any businessman knew, how he could affect his premium by knowing how to combat things, safety programs, if he knew these things, the cost would go down. The workers would not get injured. And that would protect them. Safety programs would help the worker. You wouldn't have the accidents. More thing is done by ignorance than anything else.
Somehow, Jack, we have to get the board to recognize something that's happening continually. As you know, I'm an electrical contractor. Comp insurance for a lineman is about $6.90 per working hour. That's more than a lot of people make per hour. $6.90 on top of his wage per hour is paid for workman's comp coverage here. It's a common comment in the industry. When, if you're going to have a layoff, you know, you don't tell them on Friday. I mean, you tell them 5 minutes before the airplane gets there. Or in the case of linemen, and I don't care if this room is full of them, I could tell it to them too. But in the case of linemen, if you're going to lay 20 of them off, 10 of them are going to have hurt backs tomorrow, and the comp board's going to improve every one of them, and they're going to Arizona at the expense of an Alaskan contractor. And that happens case after case after case after case. We've got a computer over here at NECA that's full of these repeat offenders, yet we're not allowed to bring that information to the comp board. When an employer comes in there to contest anything, we're not even allowed to say to the board that this guy did this to me last year, and he did it to Electric Inc. the year before, and he did it to City Electric the year before that. You guys strike us down immediately. That's not right.
Well, I would have to disagree with one thing. From my experience, having started in October, I would say that 75% of the cases are turned down. The witnesses they're either not credible, it's a phony claim. There's a chance of one being prosecuted now that had films of a guy that for 4 years drew $5.50 a week living in California because he couldn't walk. And then we saw the pictures of him playing 18 holes of golf and working on his car. I mean, truly bizarre. Things have changed, but the percentage, and I'd say this is probably consistent throughout the state, the percentage of claims is there is not a liberal bias to the board. I've heard this mentioned a lot of times. I don't think that it should be considered liberal or conservative, but on straight numbers, there are. From my limited experience, more cases that are thrown out than are approved. A certain number of are what they call compromise and releases that the board has to authorize. I think the perception that you have may not be true, or it may have changed. The languages that have been changed in the bills the last 2 years have given the board the opportunity to do things that they could not do before. But to give you an example, I'm involved with the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee who got together to work out some of the language to address some of the concerns that you've got, and that is that the courts kept overturning this. And we had a couple of attorneys that sat with us because obviously you've got to have things in draft form and have some scrutiny. We said, well, let's structure this language in such a way, let's put it in there twice so that if the bill goes through, that the courts will recognize that the legislative intent is spelled out. And the legislative intent was that the board should have the authority to determine the credibility of witnesses. It used to be the old play that if you had eight doctors and this guy had six, the preponderance of evidence, the guy with the eight doctors won. So the board members on both sides said, this is nonsense. We have enough common sense, and that's what it takes, to determine what's, you know, whether this is credible and whether all these doctors are necessary. This recent Supreme Court case that came down on the 27th of January that overruled the board, that ruled against this person, the board said, hey, we don't believe this guy. He's not a credible witness. We think his claim is incorrect. And this doctor's assumption is not correct. The Supreme Court of Alaska overthrew it. So what do you do when the Supreme Court will not back up the legislative intent? And I'm not an attorney, so I don't know. But I do know that there are a number of Supreme Court cases that come that change what the board can do. I mean, there's no sense swimming up, you know, upstream without any arms. I think there has been a change, though.
I'm willing to admit there's been a dramatic change, and I think you best described it by saying that just recently 75% of the people who come to the board got turned away, and that's indicative of what it was before. Those 75% thought they could come to the board and get away with it, because they've been getting away with it for some time.
You know, you mentioned, though, there was 27 electricians that left the North Slope. And 26 of the 27, I believe it was 27, hurt their back getting on the bus at Prudhoe.
Yeah.
Now, it would be my impression, and I don't know about that particular case, but it'd be my impression that the employer probably didn't know about that. I would be surprised that the company even knew about it, that the insurance company just took it upon themselves to do whatever they wanted to do with it. Now, that could be a completely erroneous impression, but that is a lot of the problem, that the companies don't know what to do and they leave it up to the insurance companies. But there is competition now in the insurance industry. The one company used to have 52% of the market here. They no longer have that market. I mean, there is competition. My own company, we've got branches in four states. We have changed carriers three times in the last 6 years. Because there is competition out there. People are coming and saying, well, look, we want your business. You now know what you're doing in cutting your losses, and that helps.
Now, I didn't know Mutual of Wausau was back. We literally, as a state, ran them out of here in the 70s by just no matter what they did, we just simply run them out. They had one of the finer engineering programs available to companies in the years they were here, and I'm glad to see that they're back. If they're back, that's because the board is doing a better job.
Well, the economics probably ran them out. I mean, an insurance company that could survive in here in the pipeline, in the post-pipeline days, I don't know how they did it, because there was plenty of testimony given in the 3 years of hearings about, as you say, the bad back syndrome. When I first came to Alaska in 1951, hustling furniture up in Fairbanks for New Orleans, and I mean, there has always been a certain amount. If you're faced with unemployment, compensation, which may be too low in this state, and you're faced with workers' comp, because there have been studies done on this, that is really generous, and the time comes, what do you do? If you're dishonest, you take the one. If you're in a economic crunch, you maybe take a look. There have been a lot of interesting things that have come up in the hearings over the past 3 years that were never acted on. But I think that this state is on the right track, and the groups that I work with we're continuing what we're looking at. We think there's other problems. Medical costs are just absolutely out of sight. We have met with the chiropractors. We've met with the doctors. We've got some interesting observations from both professions. We're going to be meeting with the attorneys from both sides. We're actively pursuing ways to change this thing to make it better for everybody, because it's an economic headache. You know, if I have to pay more money for workers' comp, and if you pay $6 an hour for an electrician, obviously that has got an effect on what you're able to offer your electricians as a salary. So you got to cut that down. I gave my employees, one of the benefits where I got things under control, I told my men, look, if you guys work at our safety programs and watch the new guys and do this, I'm going to split the savings and the premium with you. And we have returned our crew $20,000 in the last 3 years for our permanent employees. I mean, it's just one way to do it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. I'm sorry. I carried away on this.
I was saying, the confirmation process is important to get the attitudes of the nominee.
Yeah,
but I agree. Think we're going to resolve all the workman's comp problems this evening.
I'm sorry, I get carried away with this. I'm really interested in it.
It's been very educational, I think it's
important we have his views on record on some of the problems.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm happy that Jack's coming to stay in.
But there are a number of people
waiting. Thank you, Jack. Yes, I understand. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I'd like to have Bonnie Butler. The next ones up we have is a hairdressers and boards. And Bonnie, I don't know a lot about that, and perhaps Bonnie is in the trade. She could comment on some of the problems, or if there are problems of the board, and if she has any comments on who we're to appoint, I appreciate it. Bonnie? I'm going to try to get through here today.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before we get into this issue, it would be useful for me, this particular board is up for sunset. What is your pleasure in pursuing the resolution of that matter?
Well, the sunset, I don't know if the term of the board, I'm not familiar with it, if it's 4 years or 6 years. I am not in favor of circumventing legislatures. In other words, if it's the 14th legislature and it was 4 years, I think that the 2 years it should be addressed. And so at that time, if that comes up, and we have other boards that come up for sunset review, we will hopefully get information from people in the trade of the importance of the board and discuss it at that time.
This board is up for sunset.
Yes. I haven't.
We take no positive action this year.
It will die.
It will die. Yes. It's your intent.
It's my
to
intent.
Take action or not take action this year.
We will have action, whether it be positive or negative, I don't know.
The only action we can take is positive. If we take no action, then that is.
We will deal with it. Thank you. Bonnie?
Bonnie Butler Novacki.
If all, just to put you at ease, Bonnie, it's just that if you could relate to us some of the problems or some of the concerns of the hairdressers or the board of hairdressers and as your perception of barbers and hairdressers, and how we could improve on the board, and perhaps you'd like to comment on sunsetting if it's necessary to even have a board. But I'll leave it at that.
Okay. I really didn't know I was going to be called upon for this, but the only thing I was going to add was I think that one of the most important things on our board is impartiality. And I've known in the past that some of the board's members have, if they are an instructor or own a school of any sort, they are, they are partial to their students. And I think that's something that you as legislators should look into to make sure that the people that are going up for board are not any way associated with the school or, I guess that would be it. That's about all we have is schools. I think that if they are part-time instructor or something like that, that's fine. But if they're employed by that school or if they are an owner in the school in any way, I feel that they should not be elected to the board. I feel that I'm not sure that they can even just disqualify themselves to the applicants, licensed applicants that they know. Are familiar with.
Bonnie, do you think the board is necessary?
Yes, I do.
And what would your feelings towards the term or when it should be looked at by the legislature? Every 2 years or every 4 years or 6 years, realizing that every 2 years we have new legislators to look at. So the point I made before that some of the boards are 4 years, some are six. So you actually get by any scrutiny by sometimes two elected bodies for two terms.
I still feel that 4 years is adequate.
Would 2 years be too? That's the point I was making. Too often to be looked at?
I'm not sure. I think it is too often because you, just like here today, all your time that's involved in just electing board members all day long.
Yes.
And to do it every two years is a lot.
Well, that's what we're, this was not an abnormal day of what we do. And but the point I was making that to give the proper scrutiny, for instance, maybe if myself and Representative Wendy and Representative Pestinger and Furness, and Ewing had an opportunity to review this board, and we put our views into it and any changes and direction of that board, and it was a four-year board, maybe we would not be back, and maybe we would be elected, but we'd have new members of the public elected to scrutinize it. I don't personally think that's bad, that
no.
it could be looked at, that kept, if there's any problem that exists. We had one in the transportation dimension, you know, that some people's eyes thought that got out of hand because it was 6 year, and so that was what I was getting. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Representative Wendy.
You, are you directing your comments toward any of the nominees that we have?
Actually,
You raised a point on conflict. I guess. I'm trying to determine whether you're implying that one of the three people that is nominated for the board.
We have resumes only for two, right?
We have resumes for all three, sir, but only two are...
Two are from Anchorage, one.
Yeah. Two from Anchorage, yeah.
Actually, I have not met either of the applicants. I know of their reputations, and they, you know, have very high reputations for both of them. I am a little curious about Mrs. Ashcraft, because I had heard that she was an instructor, and that does, I do have a question on that. However, her resume said she was unemployed at the time, at this time, at present.
I would, it probably would be more appropriate for the issue where the teachers or someone associated with the school should be automatically denied access to these appointments could be addressed if we have the bill up on continuation of the board. But since
I would hope that we wouldn't put the witness to make choices to say if these are, unless she has an objection, you know, I would hope that we wouldn't require her to necessarily get into personalities, if that's the direction we're heading in, of who.
Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to ascertain, Mr. Chair. This is a hearing on confirmations.
Yes.
I don't know either one of them.
About conflicts, I just want to determine if you are advising the board or advising this committee that there may be a problem with that, with any of the nominees that are given.
No, sir. I don't even know either of them. I never met them. I just, like I say, both of their reputations are very high standards. It's just that I feel that in the past there has been problems with board members who have owned schools or have been instructors in schools, and there have been definite problems with that. And I do not wish to see that happen again.
I don't particularly care for the resolution that just if you're associated school automatically, you're not going to be, you're going to be prejudiced or something like that. But I would encourage you, if you have or aware of any appointment in which you have evidence that that is the case, people are serving on the board now or reappointed next year or sometime, to bring that forward.
No, I don't.
I see you've got the little yellow book and it's got all of our addresses in it.
Yeah. So
if anybody has any complaints, any more questions?
No.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to speak. I signed a thing out there.
Yes, yes.
It's on the Board of Regents.
Sure, sure. Come forward. Could you identify yourself?
Yes, my name's Dennis Milhouse. I own Trendsetters. It's a beauty school here in Anchorage. And I've had a lot of complaints and comments, a lot of comments about the board in the past. I just heard this gal here, I didn't get her name, but talking about not having school owners and instructors on the board. At one time, it was a statutory authority to have a school owner or an instructor on the board, because they basically had the most common sense what the industry needed and how to teach. Since the board was basically went into sunset, they revised the board and made sure that there was no instructors and no school owners on this board. And since that time, the board has just went from bad to worse. We have our testing days used to be one day, they're now down to two. Their average board costs over $3,000, and it takes over 2 days to do. Our boards are only held every quarterly, which is every 3 months. And like if somebody fails a board by, or the written portion of a board by 1 point, they're required to wait 3 more months to take the test again. We feel this is strictly and totally unacceptable. You can take your driving test and you can fail it, and the next day you can go down and take it again, and I think it'd be more dangerous whizzing down the road with a car, not knowing what you're doing, than if you missed You couldn't remember the anatomy of the bones of the body, and you missed a, you know, you missed a question or failed the test by 1 point, and then to be forced to wait 3 months. We feel this is unacceptable as school owners. I've talked to most of the school owners in the state, and the past board, not knowing basically the teaching elements and stuff, they've doubled in like our theory or the written part or the theory part of our of the practical work that we do. This law right now requires 250 hours, and it takes basically 1 year to teach that. We take the first hour of the day and teach it. Well, the board arbitrarily just said, well, we want 537 hours, and all the school owners were 100%. There's just no way to do it. And we ask them why, because Alaska, when I served 5 years on the board, and when I was on the board, Alaska had the highest student grade in the whole United States, and I think there's 38 states. And we said, listen, if we were having a lot of failures or there's a real problem with the method of instructing, you know, I could see that you'd want to boost the requirements, you know, basically to make sure we put out proficient people, because we're basically tested and licensed to protect the public. And we said, well, we don't understand, you know, if we're number one, why the heck are you doubling our more than doubling our requirements? And they said, they had a legislative gal that writes the law, she came there, it was an 8-hour meeting, we went through the whole thing, and the board agreed, and it's not the present board, it was the past board, agreed that we didn't know what we were talking about, it was right. Well, they went right back to Juneau and wrote it out into law. The little pink books that come out with the administrative code and the statutes that regulate the industry came out, and they doubled it. So we called down there and said, hey, what's going on? You know, we talked to the Department of Occupational Licensing, and it's just really been, you know, it's really kind of a lot of confusion. And what happens if there's not enough expertise on the board that they know how to really write the regulations or what to do? We have a board, we have five people on the board, a lay member, which they should have because they are to protect the public, two barbers and two hairdressers. The way they do the examination is the hairdressers and the barber and the layperson, all of their grades count to pass fail the student. We've sent students there smarter than the board members. A board member could be tapped one day and from Palmer or Ketchikan or anywhere, and the very next day examining students not going through any type of a course on what they're testing. The barbers really have no experience in cosmetology or makeup or pin curling or things like this, permanent waving or coloring, and as the hairdressers have no, you know, sharpening a razor on a strop and shaving a guy's neck and everything with a straight razor, they don't have that expertise. And the lay member has no expertise in either field, and she is allowed to fly to each board and test our students. Now our kids go to school for 2,000 hours to pass a test, and they have people that aren't even competent giving them the test. We feel that right now that they're the two hairdressers that have been recommended for Anchorage are both very qualified. One gal has given us classes. She's the only OHFC member, which she goes outside and teaches the hairdressers or the styles directors from the other states classes. She's the only one in Alaska like that. She has the highest teaching degree. We have, as a school, have asked her to come in and give us classes at no pay as part of her keeping her certificate and stuff. And any school at any place in Alaska, if they want to, Fairbanks wants to pay her way up there and buy her lunch, she'll give demonstrations and classes. We've taken the opportunity to ask her, and it's Mrs. Ashcraft. And since then, you know, basically in the beauty business, there's a lot of professional jealousy because we know the loops or how to get the right people to come in. We've asked several salon owners to come in and give us classes on what they want out of their prospective employees. And being that she has came over and give us classes, everybody's saying, well, she works there. I've called the different people and told them that you can check my payroll records. I will, you know, furnish them for anybody. Mrs. Ashcraft is not on our payroll. It's just that somebody says this, and like, you know, the gal said she's heard it, but she don't know it. And this is just what happens in our industry. The board does need a lot of revising. I feel that every 2 years is a good time, because we've had a very arbitrary board now. We couldn't get anywhere with them. You know, we fought with them. We talked to the Attorney General on laws that they passed, and they've just about legislated us out of business. The new board is very receptive on getting rid of a lot of the unfair things and getting the competent members or proctors. There's a position in the law that says they can the board can assign proctors, to, in other words, people in their profession, to administer the examinations. And this is what we've asked for, is we would like the top professionals in our field, not barbers and people that are off the street, to be helping grade our students and just keep it fair. And basically, if a girl's going to be an examiner, we'd like her to have some kind of classes, you know, to go through what to look for, what to grade for, instead of like the barber last and one hairdresser, well, she's putting that on, is it right? Well, that puts all the authority in her because he has nothing to reach back. He has no experience in it. She'll say yes or no, and she may be wrong. So what we want is them to set up classes on them for themselves on how to examine. And we feel that this would be a real positive step. And there's a lot more change, and I know this is just a confirmation hearing. It isn't a sunset hearing, but we would really like to, you know, we'd like to see the board stay. They do have a function, but we'd like to see them get some goals and reach forward and get past the gobbledygook and the bureaucratic red tape. We have girls that miss the board by one day. In other words, we can't get the paperwork into Juno 15 days before the test is even taken. She has to wait 3 more months for another board. All right, a girl from California comes in with a license. She goes right to work. She gets an Alaskan's job, a girl that went to school in Alaska, lived in Alaska, and is held up by something that's purely stupid, really. I've written letters to the occupational licensing and how they can have a test once a month in the three regional cities, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. It cost them basically $200 to do the test. We're, you know, and this is 200 each city, that's $600. But right now, they're doing it for $3,000 every 3 months. So they could have a board a month, say the first Sunday or second Sunday of every month. We've offered our school at no cost to the state. I've never charged the state for any time they use my school. I told them they could use it forever just to get more boards for the students to get their license quicker. We've never had action on it. I've never billed the state for using my school. We would like to, you know, I've written a letter to Dick Lyons to reemphasize basically what I'm saying here, is that we feel that if you have them once a month, you don't have so many, and all the board members have to do is delegate their authority, and I think that's the main thing. Some of the barbers and layperson don't want to delegate the authority. They just want to be that I am the board. The new board, I can't say that because I have briefly been working with them, and they seem real receptive to a lot of things. So, yes.
Is there a local organization of hairdressers? I mean,
yeah, there is, but it represents a very, very small amount of the hairdressers that are licensed. I think it's a little more than 1%. I could be wrong, but they're very vocal and they collect money from the rest of them with scare tactics, saying if they get rid of the board, anybody can do hair, and they'll be out here and working out of vans and everything else. And so a lot of hairdressers reach in their pocket and give the money and say, well, go up there and go to these things and talk, you know. I don't even like being up here and talking. If I went to sleep 3 or 4 times, and it just, what happens, most people are so busy running their business that they can't get in here, and when they do get in here, it's real hard to talk anyhow, you know. So a lot of them don't get involved. It's whatever somebody tells them, and they donate money to it, so they seem like they have a lot of authority, which they really don't. But there is a voice.
Alluding to either a lobbyist or some spokesman down to the legislature, I would hope that you would be available at the to testify either by teleconference through the mic. We can hook this up.
Yeah. Well, this is what we've asked before, is for the board to use the teleconference systems instead of the high cost of flying everybody from their Ketchikan, Fairbanks, and they all go down there like they had a meeting in Juneau because one person wanted to take the board. Well, they flew 5 people down there. Well, one person lived in Juneau, one lived in Ketchikan, so I guess that isn't too fair, but the Ketchikan had to get to Juneau for one person, where if they had the Proctor system, there'd be 3 or 4 individuals that would give up the one day, and the state would pay them the $80 per diem. So instead of bringing 5 people in, airfare, per diem money, and hotel rooms, it costs the state $80. Mm-hmm. And who's ever sponsoring the hairdresser, because there are no schools in Southeastern, there's just apprentices. Usually the salons around there donate the space. It's less than an 8-hour test, you know.
We would hope that we have your address, that mailing address, or how to contact you, and we'll certainly look forward when we have the Sunset Review up. They'll give you plenty of time to, hopefully you would come here and testify.
Sure.
Your testimony at that time. I read the name with you.
You certainly haven't had any trouble talking before. I think I kind of progressed.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, you know, you get going. It's so hard, so much to say, and how do you say it, or how do you, you know, don't sound like a babbling idiot, you know?
In regard to confirmations, though, you are, in essence, supporting
The board
nominations
has
of the two from April.
Right. They're both, I've known Letha for a year. I've lived here since 52 and grew up here. She grew up here. I went to high school with her for a while. She graduated. I didn't. So I know her that way, and I've known her in the industry. As far as the other gal, I've met her and been to a couple meetings. She's very receptive, very interested, and is really striving forward. I mean, it's not a very good relationship that I have so far.
Do you I'd like to ask the same question. I don't know if I made it clear what my motive was, a two-year sunset review of 2, 4, or 6.
2 years would be more than enough, because if you get a bad board in there, the only way you can get rid of them is through the legislature.
That's
and
the
you get
I
enough
felt.
People upset, and like all the school owners, almost 99% want to do something, but it's so drastic we don't basically want it. Dick Lyons has written a very good alternative if they do sunset out the board on what to do, and it's I think it's really kind of about a fair way. We have to certify things now with special licenses and stuff, and the real problem is the state has done all its paperwork so bad as we went downhill that other states won't even really accept it now. We went from turning our paperwork in quarterly to turn it in once a year. Well, there's all kinds of room for fraud in there. You could just put down anything you want, just send a whole mass of papers to Juneau, and who are they to know if you're not above board and you just sign off anything you want. We've asked them to send it, go back to the quarterly system. The withdrawal sheets used to be on one piece of paper. Now it takes 3 pieces of paper to do the same thing. And we went to the board before and told them, this is just ridiculous. It's a waste of, you know, teachers are spending more time, you know, not really bookkeepers. And just the bureaucratic red tape, it's astronomical. The old way was 10 times better than the new way. They're basically legislating us out of business. They've taken away our right to train our own people, which Alaska is a transit city or country anyhow, and there are people coming and going all the time. It's real hard to find licenses, and they say, well, you can, if they've got instructor's license, you can hire them. Well, there's a lot of, I don't know what would be a good excuse, but there's a lot of attorneys that have shingles but can't win any cases. You know, they're out of the, you know, then there's doctors that, you know, can't heal people that, you know, private industry takes care of them. In our case, we used to just, when they got out of school, the law said that all they had to do to sit for, they needed 600 more hours to become an instructor. The law said all they had to do was have the license, the hairdresser's license, before they set for the next board, which was more than fair. Now they put it, we can't even enroll them until they've been out of school for a year, plus the 600 hours, and it just takes away, because, you know, we have 50 kids, maybe only one out of there has the leadership abilities to go on and be a teacher. And they make it so restrictive, we can't even do that. And it used to be either 600 hours of training or 5 years work experience. And that's the way it was. And they went to Juneau, and 3 or 4 hairdressers went down there and said that 5 years was too restrictive. We want you to cut it back to 3 years. And so they did it, and they said, well, we don't think it's fair that a kid right out of school, even though the board sets up the curriculum that we teach by figuring 600 hours is good enough for them to have a license. They said, the girls in Juneau said, make them work a year in the field. Well, you know, they said, you know, it was real important to have work experience, so you're going to do a year, but it's not so important for you guys, so we'll take off 2 years. So they don't really have good basis of what they, you know, why they've done it.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm drifting from my own attempt to keep us to the subject of confirmation, but I want to make it clear that when you're talking sunset and you have a situation, you have a bad board, you're not talking about getting rid of the members on the board. You're talking about getting rid of the whole board,
well,
and the concept of having any licensing at all.
Well, basically, if every 2 years, the board basically has to justify their existence to you to get funding for the next couple of years. In other words, you've read the legislative audit on the report, they should have been indicted because they broke their own laws that they'd written, administrative code that the board sets forth. The board members themselves violated it, and the legislative audit had several occasions, and I'm sure that they didn't catch all the occasions that went on. And what I'm saying is that the board right now, the board that's passed, they just dropped it in everybody's lap. Said, well, they're going to take licenses away. They can't justify their existence. The past board couldn't justify their existence to anybody. So they leave the burden on the industry and the new members of saying, hey, we got to get our heads together. We've been trying to get our heads together with the board for several years now. And they've just, you know, been very arbitrary and very aloof and done absolutely everything that they could do to slow down industry. They've cheated on tests. They give an exam, then they meet at a bar and change scores so certain students don't fail. Well, this is unacceptable. You know, this is really rotten, and we don't feel that's good. And we feel that every 2 years, by reviewing it, somebody's got a report card. They got to do a good enough job where there's not 100 people out here saying, get rid of them, because that's what will happen. And then just like he's saying, if we don't do anything, they're gotten rid of. But that makes them, it's a report card. They're going to have to face somebody. And I think every 2 years is more than fair.
Thank you. I appreciate your informing us of some of the problems. And I've been here a little bit longer than you, but I still appreciate your thoughts. And you certainly enlightened us that there was gossip in the industry.
Our industry suffers from one thing. It's called professional jealousy. They like to say it's a profession, this and that, but we suffer from professional jealousy, and it's a, we got a lot. We make a lot of money, but we don't have a lot of education. That's probably the nicest and easiest way to say it.
Do
you say the same thing about Leslie?
Yeah. I've been to barber shops and hairdressers. I never did hear any gossip in there myself.
But, yeah, I bet. Because
you were saying it all.
I tried to have my aide to get in the front office to get a copy of the ethics bill, and mm-hmm. It's the same question that I asked some of the other ones. Do you know, this might spill over into some of the boards and commissions of the Board of Ethics. Yeah. I mean, the present ethics legislation, and I would hope, but it's free right up in the front. They're closed. Mm-hmm. They're state workers. They work from home. But anyway, if you're down this way to get perhaps a copy of the bill, just ask them up in front. It's free.
Well, I think a good ethics.
And if that's a legislation that primarily directed at the legislators, but it will possibly, you should read it.
Yeah.
It could have some far-reaching implications.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to read it, but I really feel that most of board members that are now are ethical people.
I feel more the legislators are, too.
Yeah. And I think that anybody that would, in fact, Letha had taught a class, I don't know, 4 months ago, and one of the girls that was very persistent in asking her questions happened to be at a board, and she did basically disqualified herself, said, well, I know her, and I don't want to, if I give her a high grade, everybody will say, wow, or if I fail her, she'll be screaming. So she just like, you know, I don't really feel that somebody with that, nobody's going to put their reputation, their professional reputation, she was born here, grew up here, is going to, you know, getting caught in a controversy or quagmire like that. I really don't.
Okay. So. Okay, well,
thank you. I'm sorry, I don't need to take everybody's time.
I think
right in town, thank you.
We got Carolyn. Not picking you first or last, it's just that that's on the list. I'm sorry for the delay, but we all suffer through the same thing. So.
Okay.
Just we have your resume, I think, and maybe you could enlighten us a little bit more of your.
Okay. My name is Carolyn Johnson. I've lived in Anchorage for 15 years. I am a hairdresser and a shop owner. I'm married for 22 years. I have 3 children. I love my profession. I want to do all I can to improve it, to keep it, to just all around, I like what I do.
What is your main role that you think would be at on the board commission? What's your
main function? Main function is examining and protection of the public. We do that. The board is, if we have examinations, you can, my opinion anyway, of how we serve the public is so that we don't get bad hairdressers. Well, we do have them, but that will hurt our profession.
Are you familiar with the present board members or the acting board?
The present, yes.
Yes. Do you think, do you have any ideas where you could improve or changes that might be necessary? I think the prior witness led us on some of the areas of at least from his view of perception. Do you have any opinion?
Well,
or think
I
that you think it might be a problem that you could improve?
Well, I feel that some of the things that he said, yes, that like the testing app could be improved monthly, but would be a help, because I mean, I realize 3 months is a long time. We are trying to work on this, and the grading system, we're trying to improve on that, and it's just some of the things, you know, that have come up that we are working on now. And
the, you know, with the budget, you know, by having everybody once a month is, you know, a lot. And I, that's why they have 3 months, you know. But we are working out the proctor system, like he says, so that we can have, you know, like here and have them in Fairbanks and Juneau type thing, so that we don't have to send everybody, so that, you know, it cuts down.
You're on the board now?
Yes.
So it is a reappointment?
No. I'm new. I'm just taking
okay.
somebody's place.
You're newly appointed, but
right.
you've already served on one
right.
of these.
One, yes.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Carol. Mr. Ashcraft? Sorry for the delay, but...
Okay, I'm Letha Ashcraft. I've lived here since 1946. I've been licensed for 20 years as a hairdresser for 20 years. With a lot of people, it isn't with me, I'm enjoying it.
Do you foresee any problems or conflict of interest in serving on the board?
No, I don't. I didn't mention, though, that I grew up in this profession. My mother was a school owner also and on the board before me. And at the time, they could have a school owner or an instructor on the board. I do think that's very important to our board because they do examine instructors and they do examine students right out of school. And the local hairdresser who is working in the salon forgets a lot of the techniques that are being introduced constantly into schools, and they have changed rapidly in our profession in the last 10 years.
On my question about the term or the sunset, you know, 2 year, 4 year, 6 year, and alluding to just some of your comments that there's changes at times that should be made, and sometimes if it doesn't come up, it can't be made until it's come up in
okay.
4 years, 2 years, or 6 years. What's your opinion of when the board should, the sunset, or the term of the board?
I think every 2 years. I think you need to get new people into your board.
Well, not necessarily for new people, but for new language possibly, and
and to be updated with your testing techniques. Our board does need to revise its practical testing,
yes.
which we have discussed. They're aware of it. They're trying. We have only had one meeting, and our budget has been cut, which is causing a lot of problems.
How much time do you feel that you have to, you know, serve for a month or whatever to spend on work?
On the board, I think we should go to the 1 month testing program with proctors and using a board member plus proctors, which would give you an 8-hour day once a month. Plus, we do need to have a complete board meeting, I would say at least once every 6 months, so that everybody is in accordance with what's going on, since we're all located in different cities.
We're having, you know, sunset stuff or sunset review, and we'll have a hearing at that time. And what do you think could be, or I hope that you would testify at that if you're available on that. What do you think could be done to better the commission, better serve the public at that time that we might review it?
I'm finding it hard to deal with the combination of hairdresser-barber boards. It does run into a lot of conflict as far as techniques for either profession. I feel that the barbers have joined our board. We've been combined as a way to keep them having a testing technique.
But would that be a solution to create another board, or, you know, a lot of hairdressers are barbers?
That's right. Nationally, I've heard lately from my national association, and they're saying that it will be one board eventually, and that there will be strictly one license issued whether you're a barber or a hairdresser.
You support that concept?
I think it's coming rapidly because of people transferring from different states and not being allowed to do some chemical services in some states and doing them in other states, if they're a barber particularly.
Thank you. Joy, Donaldson, I thank you for putting up a...
As a consumer, can I tell you that I'm very comfortable having Mrs. Ashcraft on that board, and I can't see how a hairdresser can examine an instructor that has no experience in doing that. She's probably the most highly qualified and highly trained hairdresser in this whole state.
Just a
minute. Maybe you're still
locked in. I'd like, if you got just about 5 minutes, can you wait another 5 minutes? Okay, thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
But I do think that you should realize the caliber of person that, and I feel very happy that someone of that caliber has been appointed.
We appreciate that, most certainly, that she did. And you're the board, being appointed the board of farmers?
That's right.
Yeah. On the same, have you got anything to add to your, about yourself that we should know, or why?
I think you
should?
Probably have it all in the resume.
I mean,
my name's Joy Donaldson. Lived in Alaska and practiced in Alaska 22 years. Mm-hmm. Practiced pharmacy for 33 years. Mm-hmm. I am president of Alaska Medical Center Pharmacies, which operates 2 prescription shops and medical buildings here in town.
I'd like to ask you on the length of the board, how long on the sunset do you think as problems occur, that it should be reviewed every 2 years, 4 years, 6 years? What's your
opinion? I don't see any reason why the Board of Pharmacy should be reviewed more often than every 6 years. It serves an absolutely essential function in protecting the health of the people of this country.
There's no, I agree it does, but the point is that sometimes the sunset, it takes, you have to wait till the sunset for the legislature to get involved and something it might need the legislature involved in.
Well, I am not uncomfortable with your scrutiny, and if the legislature has time to do this every 2 years, it would seem to me like it's a consuming task to review all of these boards every 2 years.
Only in the area that if there was a problem that we could possibly solve that problem without at that time.
Well, the Board of Pharmacy has a problem right now, and that is the Controlled Substance Act. You passed the law, which was very badly needed, and of course we were almost 15 years past due, and we were operating under an archaic Harrison narcotic order. The Board of Pharmacy told you that yes, they could handle that, but they had to have a pharmacy-oriented executive secretary who was experienced in the Controlled Substance Act, and there are probably 40 or 50 of these people around the country to help us implement this act. And you did fund it, but in fact that is not what the department gave us. They gave us a regulation specialist, and we find ourselves in the spot of reinventing the wheel. And that's unfortunate. And it's causing a lot of work and apprehension on all of our parts.
I'd appreciate if you would write the committee a letter expressing that, and we'll see if we can.
And we will be testifying at sunset about those concerns.
I appreciate you making a formal letter. Do you have questions?
No, with those particular comments.
Yes, I would hope that you would give us a letter that I can put in the committee files with the committee members that are not here to make them aware of the need for that.
We were given plenty of money. It's just how the department has chosen to use it.
I understand that.
It is.
If you could express that, like I said, I'd appreciate it, and we would bureaucratic.
I mean, to have a regulation specialist to spend a year and a half doing something that an experienced person could do in short order and we could put into effect.
Yeah.
And be sure that the legitimate controlled substances are not, stay legitimate in this state, which is what we're charged to do.
Joanne, I want to thank you for your patience sitting here through this and being the last witness. Probably it should be common sense to me what your essential functions are, but if you could succinctly state them, maybe give me an idea of what your physical needs are annually to perform these functions.
Well, when the Controlled Substance Act came about, the former board, which was a very fine board, told the legislature that for $150,000, they could run this act. As I understand it, at that time they were contemplating putting it in the Department of Health and Social Services, and I think the amount of money that they were asking for was quite astronomical. But that we did have to have, and I think our real problem was that they call this person an executive secretary. And for some reason, there is the opinion if you've got an executive secretary that you're splitting off and you're no longer under the control of the department. But, I mean, no matter what the person's called, what we really needed was someone that was well-versed in controlled substance. And we don't have to spend 10 years training somebody up here, since most states have had a Controlled Substance Act very much like ours, which is adopted from the federal, and they've had it for 15 years, so that there is a lot of experience in this field, but there's not any in Alaska. And so what we got were, supposedly, I haven't met them, but an inspector for a law that's not in place yet, and a regulation specialist who has spent a year and a half trying to write regulations that someone else could have done, I mean, the person that we asked for could have done, and we could have had it all in place, and the law could have been in place on January 1st, like it should have been, and like it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
John. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You guys ready?
Amen, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
We have been informed that the hearing will be March the 6th on Sunsetting.
We said we'd take it up in the next. I don't think it's officially scheduled.
Well, Harry Trader says it is told us March the 8th.
Well,
we schedule for the 5-day notice.
Perhaps in the Senate that may be so.
Right.
Okay. This is the House.
Oh, you're the okay.
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 We had told people that we anticipated scheduling some, at least a portion of the sunset review. People have called and asked. We tried to narrow it down to the next 30 days.
But will you have a small conference
here? Yes. If we can get on the net, we're going to try to have it so that we can schedule. So this will be available for people to hear what that our meeting. It's at 8:00 in the morning, from 8 till 10. And so we will try to have this network open for here, maybe in Fairbanks, and all the network if that's available. We have to schedule times when this is available. So.
No, for our hearing, there will be some.
Yes, we can definitely set it up.
We'll
definitely.
Yes.
The House side of it, just to clarify, Mr. Chairman, the House has not really, this committee has not really set any dates for taking up the sunset. Only we have committed to those who have called and asked about sunset to our committee that we would take it up. And if what they said, they asked us when, then I tried to just say that the chairman would. Except taking it up in the next 30 days. everybody that's signed in on our notice here, we will mail or call if you got phone numbers. If the phone number's a good, make certain that the phone number's a good phone number, and we will, this committee will call everybody and advise them or send them a letter.
Have a good weekend.
Anyway, nothing for but come before the committee. We're adjourned. Thank you for coming.